Bernard Keane is our Australia correspondent today. Bernard, welcome. And ahead of the COP26 big summit in Glasgow, all sorts of what happening in Australia ahead of taking your policy. Is your Prime Minister going? Has that been confirmed?
Yes. Good morning. He apparently is now going after sort of floating that he would not go. He's now generously agreed to go and show up. The big problem was always, was he going to be able to go there as a pariah, which is what Australia entirely deserves to be, or was he going to go there as someone who has actually made some improvements in Australia's climate policies? And that's been obviously the big debate here ahead of that meeting. But the fact that he's actually decided to go, I think, suggests that he's fairly confident that he will have something to announce. But whether that's actually something of substance, I think, is the real issue. I mean, Scott Morrison's record is of a man who does announcements and then either doesn't follow through or the actual substance is completely missing. And I think that's going to prove to be the case with this debate that we've got going here at the moment about whether Australia will reach net zero or seek to reach net zero by 2050. I think the general consensus is that outside Australia, at least, is that the 2050 commitment's got to be taken as read. It's the 2030 commitments that are the main game. And there, it doesn't look like there's going to be any movement at all from the Morrison government, which is racked with deep internal divisions about climate policy.
So what are some of the key, what are any of the measures, and we're pots and kettles when it comes to this at the moment, the debate we're having here, but what are the measures as they stand that are part of any emissions reduction plan?
Well, at the moment, there's a broad commitment to try to get to net zero by 2050. And there is a commitment to get to, I think it's between 26 and 28% emissions reduction by 2030. So that's our baseline sort of business as usual set of policies. The problem is that this government's set of policies are actually not really designed to reduce emissions, which may sound contradictory given that we've made these sort of commitments. But if you look at what is actually on the table as part of the government's current suite of policies, well, there's an awful lot of support for fossil fuels there. We're spending a lot of money encouraging gas exploration and putting in gas pipelines for more natural gas, so that's more fossil fuels. We are building, spending a lot of money, $15 to $20 billion on an inland rail network that is basically designed to carry more coal exports. So we're looking to ramp up Australia's coal exports. The government has proposed what a lot of people have dubbed a coal keeper tax, which is basically going to be an added impost on households and businesses' electricity bills in order to keep coal-fired and gas-fired power stations going a bit longer. And it's providing a lot of money for carbon capture and storage, which is, as anyone who's studied that area knows, has been a general failure around the world, but is much beloved of the fossil fuel industry because it would allow, enable them to continue producing fossil fuels whilst notionally sequestering carbon dioxide underground. So the government's suite of policies as they stand are kind of pro-carbon. Rather than aimed at reducing emissions.
Just a couple of minutes, and we are fairly up to date with where you're with New South Wales and Melbourne are at in their vaccinations and their reopening plans. But I'm interested in this take on who's gets to have the say, the state or the federal government?
This is the big issue that's really come out of the pandemic for Australia in terms of governance. There's been this, I call it a kind of a centrifugal distribution of power away from Canberra to our state capitals, because Australia's a federation, it's a bunch of different states and territories. And really, most of the main decisions in relation to the handling of the pandemic over the last 18 months, when we're going to be coming up to 2 years soon, have actually been made by the state premiers. And it was really interesting recently that one of the national newspapers in its annual list of, who's the most powerful people in Australia, put the premiers ahead of Scott Morrison. And that's played out quite vividly over the last couple of weeks, because There's a new premier in New South Wales, Gladys Berejiklian, resigned over integrity issues, and her replacement, Dominic Perrottet, very, very keen to open up the state much more quickly. And one of the things he readily announced just last week was he was going to open New South Wales's borders. He was going to remove quarantine restrictions. No one would have to quarantine or even home quarantine after coming into New South Wales from outside the country. And within a few hours, Scott Morrison had to more or less gently remind him that he wasn't actually in charge of our international borders. He just gets to control a state border. But that's a great example of the fact that state premiers now are calling the shots about all sorts of things that traditionally have been in the purview of the federal government, and just how that is going to be reversed and we go back to a much more traditional model where Canberra ran, you know, called the shots, is really one of the big sort of mysteries of that are going to, you know, persist after the pandemic's finished.
Thank you, Bernard. Bernard Keane, Australia correspondent today.